This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
You are listening to the Oddball Aussie Podcast with me, your host, Oz Oddball. During this episode, you may hear things that challenge your own beliefs, but please have an open mind and enjoy. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Aussie Oddball, and if you have any stories you want to share, send them to theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome back to the Oddball Aussie Podcast. First one for 2023. Happy New Year, and I hope you're all doing very well. It feels so good to be back in this chair and doing this again. And this year is going to be a bit different. We're going to be starting to look in some new ground. We're going to break some new ground, and we're going to be looking into, I've been saying this all last year, but we're finally going to do it. We're going to start looking into things like cults, things like ritualistic groups, strange religions. We're also going to look into how the mind works and what makes a person tick. So this is going to be, a little bit different. We're still going to be doing all the same old stuff as well, though. We're still going to be doing the Oddball Files. So the Oddball Files, that's where you're going to get all of your ghost stories, your UFO encounters, your cryptids and your sightings, things like that. I'm still going to be doing all of that. So if you don't like the darker side of things, if you don't like cults and missing persons, when I say missing persons, mostly missing persons with a strange disappearance that hasn't been solved, not missing persons that have been found, and not missing persons where we've caught a murderer. So if you're not into that sort of darker side of things, then the Oddball Files will still be there. I mean, not that they're always that lighthearted, but yeah. It's definitely going to be something different, and don't worry, I'm not turning into another murder podcast. Nothing wrong with murder podcasts, but I can't do those sort of shows. It's not me. So we're definitely going to be sticking with the strange and the weird, but also looking at how the mind works and what makes us tick. So yeah, I'm glad to be back. So tonight we will be doing an overview of cults. Now, I'll preface this with, I also want to do a lot more interviews, and this year I want to bring on a lot more people who challenge my way of thinking. And I want to bring on people who are just very different. All the strange stuff as well, people who have had encounters, I still want all of you to contact me. I'll read your encounters out on shows as well, and definitely leave likes and reviews on Apple Podcasts. I don't think it's even called that anymore, but wherever you can leave a review, definitely leave reviews. But I'm also going to target people who are in the field of psychology, people who deal with cults and cult leaders. So anyone who's, you know, sociologists, anyone who's been, anyone who's had anything to do with any of this stuff, anthropologists, you know, I'm not any of these things. I'm just someone who's just digging in and finding some questions that I want to ask and learning as well along the way. Also would love to interview anyone who has been in a cult or a strange ritualistic religion, who feels comfortable coming on and talking about your past beliefs or your past groups that you've been in. This can also include anyone who's been in financial cults, you know, cryptocurrency cults, or in any of the investment cults, anything like that. So definitely anything that is cult-like behavior, and if you've been a part of it, let me know. Maybe you're an ex-cult leader and you want to get something off your chest. I'm always here to listen. There is no judgment on this show whatsoever. I give you the floor when you come on to the show. You've all heard that in my past interviews. So, if you want to reach out, you can reach me at theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. The link for that will be below in the description and the in the title cards. And you can also find me at Twitter at Aussie Oddball, and also on Instagram at Aussie Oddball, though I'm more likely to communicate with you through email or Twitter, to be honest. I am looking into a few new social media accounts as well. Maybe Matador, someone suggested to me yesterday. So I am looking into a few. So if anyone has any suggestions, hit me up over on Twitter or send me an email about suggestions for social media. No, I'm not going to be using Facebook. I'm about to actually delete the Facebook account. I just don't like using it. It's just not my scene. But yeah, so getting all that out of the way, let's go on with the show. All right, so we're going to be discussing cults. Now, where does cult come from? Well, in modern English, cult is usually a pejorative term for a social group that is defined by its unusual religious, spiritual, or philosophical beliefs and rituals, or its common interest in a particular personality, object, or goal. This sense of the term is controversial and weakly defined, having divergent definitions both in popular culture and academia, and has also been an ongoing source of contention among scholars across several fields of study. So that's the definition for you. What we'll be looking at is more of the 19th century term. So this is where they talk about excessive devotion. This is really where the idea of cult as a derogative term started, and that's what we're going to be looking at. So we're not talking about, say, something like the imperial cult of ancient Rome or anything like that. We're going to be talking about cults in a modern sense, and definitely how dangerous they can be. And we're going to have a look at a lot of different types over the year. So tonight is just going to be talking about cults in general, what they are, what a cult leader is, and how can you identify them. What I want this series this year to be about is, how do I identify a cult? I want people to be entertained by this, but I also want them to have a look at this and go, am I in a cult? Is my loved one in a cult? Are my friends being attracted to a cult? Yeah, these are the questions I want people to ask themselves, because I'm doing a lot of this because I've met people who have fallen into these cults. I've got friends who have fallen into cults or have almost been pulled into cults. Or cult-like behaviors. So it's definitely, there's definitely cults of personality out there that can drag people in. And you might not realize it until you're deep inside the cult. So definitely use this as a learning tool as well. So when we look at cults, we need to look at one of the earliest people who started researching them, which was Max Weber. Now, Max Weber was born in 1864. And died in 1920. He was a German sociologist, historian, jurist, and political economist. So he's regarded as one of the founding fathers of sociology. And he also played a big part later on in life with categorizing and understanding the social aspects of cults. And he got this from his work in occultism. So occultism has a very strong connection to cults, especially originally. So when he originally started studying this stuff, he went into some of the different sociology of the Far Eastern religions and started to realize that there were connections here to some of the Western groups that were forming. Now, he would look into mostly German occult figures. He visited the Ordo Templi Orientis at Monte Verita shortly before articulating his idea on disenchantment. He is known to have met the German poet and occultist Stefan George and developed some elements of his theory of charisma after observing George. Now, this is the idea that, charisma can win people over, can control people. Yeah, it's the old idea that someone who has a lot of charisma can easily make anyone believe anything. Think street magicians. The most charismatic street magicians will get you just so distracted that you won't even see the trick until it happens. So he would study all this, and then he would bring this forward. Now, the interesting thing was early 1900s all the way till 1940s, and a little bit in the 60s, but sort of started to change from there on. There was a culture amongst upper middle class and lower upper class people and families who would have these dinner parties. They invite the friends around and they would all get together. And we all know dinner parties and all this. And I'm not talking about the dinner parties where you throw the keys in the bowl. I'm talking about dinner parties where they'd finish their meals, they'd have a chat, and then they'd close a certain room up in the house. From here, they would then try to communicate with spirits. This was very, very popular during these times, never to be displayed in public, never to be spoken about in public. This was essentially the upper middle class and lower upper class having their own little secret societies. Now, to do this occultism was very taboo. This could involve having seances, connecting hands and trying to communicate with spirits, using incenses to stimulate spirits. This could have been with later on in years with the use of Ouija boards. If you want to know about Ouija boards, have a look at my episode. Just type it into to the Podbean there. You'll find my episode on Ouija boards. Very, very interesting. And yeah, this was very popular during those times. Table tipping as well. The act of putting your hands on a table, communicating with spirits and asking the spirit to move the table around. There were so many different types of seances that a person could do. And it was very, very popular at the time. So this really sparked interest in a lot of people to take it further. From here, we'd see Max Weber's teachings start to spread, and maybe not directly from him to another person, but definitely others would start to take up his ideas and spread them. So someone who was very, very important in occultism, in debunking occultism, was Harry Houdini. Now, remembering that Max Weber died in 1920, well, Harry Houdini died in 1926, so only 6 years later. And he was also very, very big into going around debunking these people who were basically taking advantage of others, you know, bringing them into the haunted mansions, the fake mansions and things like that. So when you go forward from Houdini, you've got a lot of other people who start carrying this on as well. Now, this then drives people a bit more underground. So people become a bit more protective, smaller groups in people's homes. So we see the 1930s, 1940s, these are smaller groups. But now these smaller groups start thinking, well, if we can do this in our own home, is there anywhere else we can do this? Is there anyone else we can discuss and have our, and share our views with that aren't going to treat us like we're crazy? And of course they found this. They found each other. And when groups of people who have the same willingness to believe in something come together, all it takes is a single person with charisma and ability to take control of that group of people, to make them believe things that they didn't think they would believe before. I can guarantee you a lot of the people who are deep into these cults nowadays or have been in the past, if you were to speak to them 10 years prior, 5 years prior, they would not believe what they were going to do in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time. They would just shrug it off and say, I'd never be that person. Some people are so convincing. And throughout the year, we're going to discuss even how advertisement, how media, how celebrity really controls people's minds in a different way. But let's focus on the cults for now. So when we think about cults, we've got to think about different types of cults. So there's a lot of information out there about different types of cults. A lot of different people break it down into lots of different ways of describing it. Now, one person I've really looked into that has a really good sound control on this stuff is the ICSA, which is the International Cultic Studies Association. So, ICSA. So, ICSA, very interesting. Go on their website. They have resources for anyone who is leaving a cult, anyone who has left a cult who needs help. They will steer you in the right direction. And they're an international group. I never even knew about them. And I've been studying cults now since middle of last year. And it was only recently that this group sort of popped up in a conversation I was having with someone. So once you do find them, their information is so far spread. You can find help from them anywhere in the world. It's really, really worth looking into. And the other one I would recommend as well is Cult Recovery 101. You can go to them at cultrecovery101.com. And there's a lot of resources on there for anyone who is worried about a loved one or is worried about themselves. And the website for ICSA is ICSA, I-C-S-A, home.networkforgood.com. And you can become a member, you can donate, or you can just use their resources. Honestly, all their resources are free. The donations are just to help them keep going. But you can use all their resources to help understand cults. So now that I've done I've done spreading their word out there and spreading their website out there, let's have a look at what some of the what ICSA says about these cults. So ICSA breaks it down into some checklist, and I'll post this checklist in the description of the show as well for you to have a look at. And anyone who's interested in this stuff and anyone who wants to join me in studying this stuff over the next year, save this somewhere. It's really important to save this and learn what you're looking for when you're thinking about, is someone a cult leader or is someone in a cult or is this group a cult? And a cult doesn't need to be thousands of people. It can be three people. Three people can be a cult. So the group, so here's the checklist. The group is focused on a living leader to whom members seem to display excessively zealous, unquestioning commitment. The group is preoccupied with bringing in new members. The group is preoccupied with making money. Questioning, doubt, and dissent are discouraged or even punished. Mind-numbing techniques such as meditation, chanting, speaking in tongues, denunciation sessions, debilitating work routines are used to suppress doubt about the group and its leaders. The leadership dictates sometimes in great detail how members should think, act, and feel. For example, members must get permission from leaders to date, change jobs, get married. Leaders may prescribe what types of clothes to wear, where to live, and how to discipline children, and so forth. The group is elitist, claiming a special exalted status for itself, its leaders, and members. For example, the leader is considered the Messiah or an avatar. The group and or the leader has a special mission to save humanity. The group has a polarized us versus them mentality, which causes conflict with the wider society. The group's leader is not accountable to any authorities, as are, for example, military commanders and ministers, priests, monks, and rabbis of mainstream denominations. The group teaches or implies that its supposedly exalted ends justify means that members would have considered unethical before joining the group, for example, collecting money for bogus charities. The leadership induces guilt feelings in members in order to control them. Members' subservience to the group causes them to cut ties with family and friends and to give up personal goals and activities that were of interest before joining the group. Members are expected to devote inordinate amounts of time to the group, and members are encouraged to require to live and or socialize only with other group members. So a pretty thorough list there. Now, when we're thinking about this, this is a general checklist. Now, you may not tick all the boxes. We're talking about most of the boxes. Now, generally speaking, though, if you're going to tick, say, half these boxes, the other half are probably true. You just haven't seen it yet, or you haven't felt it, or it's something you haven't opened your eyes to yet. So it's definitely still there probably. It's just that maybe you haven't been a witness or you don't want to believe. So definitely use that. Again, I'll put that list in the description of this show and definitely save it somewhere. Now, when we think about the types of cults is the next one we need to really take a look at. So types of cults, can include Eastern mystical groups. Now, this is where someone takes something like Hinduism or Buddhism or other pantheistic Eastern religions and then changes them. Self-realization fellowships, yogis, things like that, where people want you to be free. Well, they say they want you to be free, but they always ask you to follow. Now, generally speaking, Buddhism and things like that are very open. They don't demand things like that all the time. But cults that take on these pantheistic Eastern religions will demand things of you. Aberrant Christian groups that claim to be Bible-based but which deviate in practice or beliefs, such as The Way International, the Boston Church of Christ, and the Shepherding Movement. Psycho-spiritual or self-improvement groups. Groups offering seminars or workshops providing self-improvement or personal transformation. A group cultic trend. So group cults in the sense of, you know, you can be whoever you want to be, as long as you believe it. You can will and you can believe that something, you can be a millionaire as long as you will it. And if you don't get to be a millionaire, it's because you failed. Not the self-help group. It's because you failed. They're becoming very, very popular nowadays. When we think about this, we think about transcendental meditation. We also have LifeSpring and The Forum. These are other groups that people have formed. But then even look at some of these YouTube clips. I'm sure this will be on YouTube. And I'm sure if you go on YouTube, you will find, you won't even have to find them. Half the time, they'll just pop up. These people who are telling you you can be a millionaire, you just need to believe it. They're telling you that you can be a millionaire, you just need to follow their 10 rules. Or even more recently, I've seen people with, I have 3 rules. And you know, you get through the ad and they only teach you one rule. The other 2 rules are behind a paywall. And it might be a one-off book. You know, you buy this one-off book and this book's going to tell you how to be the fittest person in the world. But the problem is at the end of that book, it tells you that you need coaching, you need guidance. And from there, you then go into, I need to pay a subscription service. I need to buy their next book. I need to buy their supplements. I need to buy their vitamins, you know, whatever it is. That's where people start. This is a very common form of cult-like behavior and very, very common cults. And I'm flat out going to call most of them cults because it is very much a cult of personality. We then have the eclectic or the syncretistic, a combination of several religion traditions, includes the Unification Church, also known as the Moonies, and the Church Universal and Triumphant. So this is, using religious traditions and putting them in a more modern spin. Then we have the psychic, occult, and astral. These groups offer secret wisdom and lost truths. Examples include UFO cults and Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment. Now, I won't say their names right now, but if you're a long-term listener of the show, you'll remember in my very early days, I crossed paths with a certain UFO leader who I would suggest has a group of people that tick a lot of the boxes working under him. These people were very, very threatening to me, and I still get the occasional threat here and there. But they're in my sights. I'm going to be definitely talking more about them in the future, so keep an eye out for that. You'll know them as soon as they come up. So then we've got established cults. Now, established cults are Bible-based cultic religious movements, which have achieved mainstream status. This would include Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses, and the Christian Science groups. Extremist political social movements, such as groups cultic in the psychological or social sense, which include the Aryan Nation, White Aryan Resistance, and the Ku Klux Klan. These can also be broken down into other groups as well. So we could look at these groups as destructive cults. So destructive cults generally refers to a group whose members have, through deliberate action, physically injured or killed other members of their own group or other people. Then we've got Doomsday Cults. The Doomsday Cult is an expression which is used to describe groups that believe in apocalyptic end days, things of that nature. And it can be used to refer to both groups that predict disaster and groups that attempt to bring it about. In the 1950s, American social psychologist Leon Festinger and his colleagues observed members of a small UFO religion called the Seekers. For several months, they recorded and they spoke to them. The conversations they recorded both prior to and after the failed prophecies from their charismatic leader were very interesting. Their work was they published in the book When Prophecy Fails, a social and psychological study of a modern group that predicted the destruction of the world. Now, can you fit all that on the cover of a book? In the later 1980s, Doomsday cults were a major topic of news reports, with some reporters and commentators considering them a serious threat to society. Now, we still see them today. I mean, you bunker people, not all of them, but there are people who have this apocalyptic belief that something bad is going to happen. And it can be dangerous when they form a cult-like group. Some of them form militias that can be very dangerous as well. We also have political cults. Now, political cults are exactly what it sounds like, a cult based around political ideology. Now, when I'm talking political cults, we're talking about both sides of politics here, far left or far right. Now, generally speaking, if someone says they're very left wing or they're very right wing, they generally don't mean like this. When we're talking about political cults, we're talking about people who are willing to kill and die in the name of their politics. People who are willing to kill and die in a society that doesn't require it. So we're not talking about, you know, freedom fighters in a tyrannical country, third world country. We're talking about established politics where people try to subvert the normal means of election and things like that. And generally as a group. So in their 2000 book, On the Edge of Political Cults, Right and the Left, Dennis Turish and Tim Walforth discuss about a dozen organizations in the United States and Great Britain that they characterize as cults. So I have ordered their book, On the Edge, Political Cults, Right and Left, and we will be discussing a few of them later on as well in the year. So then we've got the polygamous cults. So where, you know, you've got men that can have multiple wives. Very rarely is it the other way where you've got women have multiple husbands, but they do exist out there. A lot of the polygamous groups are tied to domestic violence and child abuse. So not saying that all polygamists do this, but a lot of the polygamous cults do end in this. And there are quite a few that we will be discussing about, especially anyone who has already heard of Wilford Woodruff. Yes, we will be talking about him this year. Then we've got racist cults. Sociologist and historian Orlando Patterson has described the Ku Klux Klan, which arose in American South after Civil War, as a heretical Christian cult. Cults that are formed around a racial belief that one race is superior to the others. Most would say that Nazism is very much a cult-like behavior behind them, especially when we look at neo-Nazis and things like that. Then we have terrorist cults based around jihadists, based around people who want to use their cult to perform terrorist-like activities. So not always, you know, it's definitely not one belief system. Certainly one belief system gets blamed for it a lot of the time, but we see terrorist cults in the IRA. There was some big terrorist cults within the IRA. So if the mainstream IRA were what they thought as freedom fighters, the worst of the worst would be your terrorist cults. We've seen this with multiple countries all around the world with multiple different belief systems. So it's not just one particular race, and it's not just one particular religion that forms a terrorist cult. Just want to get that off the table as soon as we start. Because it's a very, very much... I grew up late 90s, early 2000s, where we were supposed to be scared of Muslims. News wanted us to be afraid of them after September 11, and now I have some really good friends of mine who believe in that. And I treat them exactly as I treat all my religious friends. Just don't shove it down my throat. We're talking again about extremists. We're talking about people who take the word of something and take it to the nth degree, who take it out of context and want to use it to harm people and to terrorize people, whether that's psychologically or physically. There's also a lot of anti-cult movements, and some of these you need to be worried about. So most of them are pretty good. Christian counter-cult movement is out there, the secular anti-cult movement, and there are a few others, but some of them and people within them, it's that becoming the thing you hate the most. Some of these counter-cult movements become very cult-like in their own orthodoxy, in what they believe and how they follow through with it. You could see a lot of people who were witch hunters back in the day in Salem. You could say a lot of them were very cult-like in their groupings. They'd meet together in a meeting hall and they'd discuss where they'd go and hunt witches next and things like that. So there's definitely counter-culture movements that eventually become what they are trying to fight. Again, this is not to attack anyone's belief systems. Please be aware of that. Now, so we've discussed the types of cults. We've discussed what makes a cult, but why do they exist? Well, cults all have very similar characteristics, as we saw with the different types and as we saw with the checklist. Now, people who are looking for something are going to be drawn towards cults. People who need leadership, who are rudderless, they need a shepherd, will seek out the authoritarianism of a cult. People who are counterculture to society, people who do not feel they fit in with normal society, might find the oppositional basis of many of these cults to be the values that they fit in with. Maybe not all of them, but, you know, they listen to the same music as me. They like to dress the way I like to dress. So at least we've got that in common. And before they know it, they're being inducted in. Some people like cults because they're exclusive. Many, many people would say Scientology is a cult. And the exclusiveness of being in Scientology and paying your way to the truth, to the upper echelon of society. There's a lot of groups like that. Legalistic, this is where people find that framework and governorship is a real good way of living. They want to be governed. They want to understand, you know, this is the lane I'm in and this is what I need to follow. They don't want to have it pushed down their throats, but they just want to be steered. And that's where the legalistic minded people would come into that. Then you've got people who are they put undue emphasis on experience and emotions, often resulting in anti-intellectualism. So this is very subjective. So this could be seen as people in possibly groups like anti-vaxxers. Not just talking about COVID, anti-vaxxers in general. They're using a subjective emotion about a particular thing to push an anti-intellectual basis and then control people. There's also people who are just trying to flee persecution of their consciousness. So they believe that if they go to this group, that this group is singled out and this group is being attacked because they're of their consciousness, because they are open to the truth. They must be real because everyone is saying that they're dangerous. So when the consciousness is being persecuted, it attracts people. Stern sanctions issued for anything less than total obedience. Now, this is above authoritarian. These are people who want that obedience. They want to bow down. They want to be servants. Esoteric. So people who are looking for something that is in the you know, Aleister Crowley, people that want to look up to someone like that and want to believe that their magic can make things happen, that the street magician actually is doing magic and not just doing a sleight of hand. They look for hidden or inner truth. And sadly, a lot of people who have this need to find inner truth, there's nothing wrong with that. But the sad part of it is that they get hustled into these groups. And then you've got people who are just sick and tired of structured religion. They're sick and tired of what they normally do in church, what they normally do, in the mosque. You know, they want to get out, they want to experience something new, and they don't think that their place of worship is really doing enough in society. And then all of a sudden a group comes along and says, you can be a problem solver and not just turn up. You can do something. And that thing might start off with, you come in every day and you pray as you would in any church, mosque, or anywhere like that. But then it turns into, oh, but now we need you to do this one thing for us. Then that one thing becomes, oh, well, we're going to look after you. We're going to make you some made up rank that they give you. And now you feel empowered. Now you feel stronger because you're a level above all the new ones coming in. And so you feel like you've got a place to belong. And they lean on that for the rest of your time till the point where you're doing something very dangerous or very stupid and you're maybe taking someone's life or doing harm to someone. And that sometimes is where people are in too deep and they don't know how to get out. So there's a lot of reasons why people look for cults. Now, there's been a cult explosion. Now, that's not an exaggeration. Conservatively, in America alone, there's 3,000 to 5,000 cults. Now, in Australia, we're looking at 1,000 to 2,000 cults. Now, for our numbers, that's pretty crazy. Now, remember what I said when I said cults don't have to be these massive groups of people. We're not all of them are Jim Jones. Some of them are these small groups of 3 to 4 people, maybe 5, maybe 10. They got together because they were playing cards one night and they decided that they're going to create a polygamist group amongst them and their wives, and no one's going to have a wife anymore. They're just going to share their wives with each other. So the doctrine is created amongst them. They start believing in something. They start worshiping something. And next minute, they become a cult. That's how some of these little cults can start. And maybe never grow or maybe become something bigger. Many of these cults fail in their first year of being in existence. They've got about the same failure rate as small business, to be honest. But I think small business would be a bit safer for you to go into psychologically anyway. So then we need to look at the statistics. So the statistics show that doctrinal issues alone have little to do with why most people join cults. The three main reasons are healing for emotional hurts, establishing friendships and relationships, and spiritual growth. Now, those three things sound fine, don't they? They sound really healthy. They sound like things that we would join a self-help guru for, a group of friends that we've got a common interest in. Now, if that's where it stops, that's fine. It's when these groups start to ask you to do worse things. Then you could add in there coercive persuasion or thought reform, properly called brainwashing. So this is where they fill your head with something, make you believe that you can be someone as long as you join this group, as long as you pay your money, as long as you do the dirty deeds that we want you to do. You know, you join a cult-like group with your wife and kids, and the cult-like group tells you to hand your wife and kids over. They're going with another man now. But we're going to now make you a spiritual leader within the group because you handed your wife and kids over. Yeah, that's brainwashing. Someone who's willing to do that, that's absolute brainwashing. So a growing body of research supports the view that many cults effectively utilize subtle forms of psychological persuasion to recruit and retain members. So virtually anyone can get involved in a cult under the right circumstances. This is where it's the most terrifying thing to me, because I've watched people enter these groups or group up with people believing that they're doing the right thing. That, oh, I couldn't be in a cult, could never be in a cult. 3 months down the track, everything they described to me is exactly what a cult does. Yeah, and if you even once try to question that, ooh, now you are ostracized from that cult and you've been so busy putting your effort and your focus into this cult that you've burnt your friends, you've burnt your family, and now the cult has turned its back on you. So now you can't go back to your family. You can't go back to your friends. They don't trust you anymore and you've well and truly burnt those bridges. So what happens? Well, one or two things. You maybe have a strong enough persona where you leave and you start a new life. Eventually, maybe you try to rebuild bridges and you get some of your friends back. Maybe your family, you know, forgives you. But this takes time. The other side of this is that that cult comes back to you. And they say to you, well, look, we're going to give you one more chance. You know what you did was wrong. We're going to give you one more chance. You come back, but when you come back, we're not going to, you know, feed you or clothe you. You're going to have to do all that yourself from now on. You're going to have to pay a heavier subscription, or you're going to have to do more work around the house or the mansion or whatever they're living in, or you're going to have to give up family members. You've got a daughter. Okay, well, you're going to have to marry that daughter off to one of our sons, and then you can come back into the group. These are the things that people then go, well, that seems quicker, and their brainwashing hasn't worn off. So that seems quicker, that seems better, so I'm going to go with that. Crazy, crazy thoughts, but it can happen to any of us. There are some people who are more predisposed to this. People such as addicts, anyone who has an addictive personality and easily gets addicted to things, are generally easier to sway into a cult-like family or group. So when we think about things like that, we know these people. We know our family and friends who are addicted to poker machines. We know our family and friends who are addicted to, you know, buying the trashy magazines and listening to everything that the trashy magazine has to say. And, you know, you can't say anything because this newspaper told them, you know, this is what is wrong with the world. That newspaper told me to believe that, so that's what I'm going to believe. People who can't separate their brain and can't look at opposing thoughts are very much more predisposed to being controlled by a cult-like movement. So certainly if you are someone like that, you've got to have a very introspective thought about yourself and where you go from there. So we've had a look at why people join, the types. We've talked about the checklist and how to identify that your family or a friend is in a cult. Now, we're going to go to a very quick break. We're going to play a tune for you now. And after that, we're going to talk about a few of the deadly cults that we've seen out there to give you an example. A few of these you probably have heard of. And then we're also going to discuss cult leaders in general. So we're going to target the leader overall. For now, this is Daddy Longlegs with The Stranger Rides Tonight. Enjoy.
Yeah. Radio Land.
And welcome back to the Oddball Aussie podcast. Okay, so we're discussing cults and what are they, where they come from, how do you know, who joins them, who's susceptible to them. I think we've had a really good sort of conversation so far, even though it's been one way. But if you want to tell me anything that you thought of, any feelings you've had so far from the show, let me know at theoddballaussie@hotmail.com or send me a message on Twitter at Aussie Oddball, on Instagram there as well, if you want to check that out. So, yeah, it's interesting stuff. I find it very interesting. I hope you do as well. And we're only scratching the surface. There's a lot more to go into with this. From here out, we're going to now discuss a few cults that exist out there that we know of or that have existed, many of them gone now. So a few more of the famous ones. We're not going to go in depth on them. We're just going to give you an overview. And a few of these names might make you go, yep, I know that one. And then from there, we're going to start talking about cult leaders. What makes a cult leader? So a long episode tonight, but I figured it's been a while since I've sat down and recorded for you all. So I'd push out a long episode for my first one back. So let's have a look at some of these cults. So you've got the People's Temple. So Reverend Jim Jones started the People's Temple. It was originally to help the homeless and jobless and sick. So this had good intentions on the surface until we dug further in. To remove his group from further scrutiny, Jones started a colony in the jungles of Guyana where he hoped to build a tropical utopia. So a congressman then visited the commune with three journalists to investigate the abuse claims that had been thrown out there. There was quite a few abuse claims, claims of rape, physical abuse. And so when they got there, they were shot and killed when trying to leave. So after the shootings, the 913 commune members, including hundreds of children, perished after drinking poisoned Flavor Aid. So the old saying, or the saying that people use, you know, don't drink the Kool-Aid, meaning don't believe everything you're being told. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. That's exactly what they drank. They drank the Flavor Aid, different brand, but yeah, Kool-Aid worked its way in there somewhere. But Jim Jones had them a drink at all. He had his own little throne there that he drank it as well, and they all died. I'm not going to share pictures of it. You can look that up yourself if you choose to, but just be aware it is very horrific what you'll see. Hundreds and hundreds of dead bodies, and some of them are children. And they all believed in Jim Jones that strongly that they just went with it. And he got there, he won them over through food, bit of money, housing security. Yeah, no one else is helping them. He chose to target downtrodden people for a reason. Then we look at people like Heaven's Gate. Heaven's Gate was the cult led by Marshall Applewhite primarily, and they thought that Earth and everything on it was about to be recycled to a clean state, which meant they needed to get off the planet. And the only way to do that, their leader told them that they could hitch a ride on the Halley-Bopp comet in 1997 in March that could help them to survive. 39 members, including Applewhite himself, poisoned themselves in shifts in a California mansion wearing Nike sneakers and armbands that read Heaven's Gate Away Team. And sadly, I was told that there's still people out there who still believe that there's something to it, that the Away Team was sort of a sacrifice, and that Applewhite knew what he was doing. Again, we'll get into that over time. Obviously, we've got people like the Manson family, you know, charismatic, played guitar, formed his criminal group called the Family. In 1968, that was, Manson thought an apocalyptic race war between whites and blacks would occur in 1969, after which the commune would rule the new world. However, when it did not happen, he then sent out his followers, his family, to do a string of murders to show blacks how to do it. But the victims Manson selected were those who had not helped him with his music careers. So this was, very targeted. Again, focusing on a group of people who this time around it was more charisma that attracted them. And he used his apocalyptic race war to really drive people to believe what he was saying. And we've got the Branch Davidians in Waco. They were a major split from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Branch Davidians are famous for the 1993 FBI raid on Waco. In their compound, 76 were left dead. The event more or less resulted in the disappearance of what many considered to be a cult, which believed in an imminent apocalypse. So again, another apocalyptic cult. Scary thing is, and we'll see this, you'll learn this over the next over the next year as we go through these. Seventh-day Adventist Church doesn't have a great history of splinter groups. A lot of splinter groups come from them, and a lot of them end up, forming cult-like groups or flat-out cults. A few of you might have seen this on Netflix. There's a documentary about Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh's communities. The Indian mystic Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh founded several cultist towns in Oregon throughout the 1980s. Strangely, communities chock full of Rolls-Royce cars. Sri allegedly poisoned hundreds in Dallas, Oregon, and with salmonella bacteria in 1984 to rig local elections in his cult's favor. And honestly, he is definitely one we're going to go into because this man controlled towns. He had power. It was that crazy. So he's definitely on the list of ones that we'll talk about. Then we talked about cargo cults already. Now, some of you who've been listening for a fair while will remember the episode on cargo cults. If you haven't, go back and listen to that. We might touch on it, but it won't be till later because we've already sort of talked about it. Cargo cults are these isolated communities on islands that have only ever encountered the monarchy through storytelling and through AM and FM radio stations, and they create this army to look like English soldiers. They worship the king, the now king, then Prince Charles, and they worshipped his father as well. Absolutely worship the monarchy. They had a place for the queen and everything, and they make their uniforms out of wood and straw and bush grasses and things like that. They build airplanes thinking that this is what their monarchist gods want. They perform in groups to their people dressed in this very colonial style uniform that they've created. They create medals for each other. It's very interesting. Just from what they encountered, and a couple of times the royals had actually visited, and this was like Jesus coming back to earth for most of them. And then we got the Raelians. So if you believe UFOs spawned most religions, mind transfer is possible, and cloning can lead to reincarnation, then you might be a candidate for the Raelian Church. Started in France in 1970, a Raelian follower made headlines in 2003 when she claimed to have conceived the first cloned human, but the event was later called a hoax. Again, definitely one we'll be touching on. That isn't the UFO cult that I was referencing, but there's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of similarities to the one that I'm thinking of. And honestly, I'm thinking that when we do that episode, I will welcome anyone who's part of that group to come and have a conversation. A little bit of juice there, just for you to sit there and wonder. Maybe go through the back catalogs of my show and see if you can figure out who I'm talking about. So, what is a cult leader? So, a cult leader is a person who can manipulate and control others through charisma, through shady dealings, whatever it takes. Generally speaking, a cult leader is someone who has that something that people want to follow. It's very interesting when you see a lot of cult leaders, they could have very easily been politicians. With a different life, with a different background, they could have been politicians. Some people will say that politicians are very much like cult leaders, very narcissistic, and very, very much about themselves. Most cult leaders require their cult to believe they are some sort of messiah or godlike figure. So many of these cults have those checklist things in common because of who their leader is. because they have these leaders who all have so much in common, it makes the cult then in turn be very much based around that cult of personality, that person, the persona. So if you've got someone who's very much a rock star style cult leader, let's say like Manson, you will have followers who are much more prone to, say, things like psychedelic drugs. You'll have more people who are prone to, using music, using colors and sound to evoke a response. So very much the use of music and drugs to make a person believe that this person is a god. The use of LSD is quite big in groups like this, where they will give their believers or their followers LSD or some other psychedelic, and then they will present themselves in a flowing robe, or they'll present themselves playing guitar and singing like an angel. Because while the person is in that state, what they are seeing is everything around the person is much brighter. The feeling inside them is a warmer feeling most of the time. And if they can control the person's trip and how they're handling their high, then they can control the outcome. Now, if someone's having a bad high, if someone's having a bad trip, and the cult leader comes in and saves them and makes them feel comfortable and safe, now all of a sudden you've got a savior figure. So drugs can play a big role in cults, especially cults that are based around someone who's using that rock and roller style look and appeal. Then you've got your cults that are very much based around people who are like old school priests or evangelical ministers. So people like your Jim Jones, who very much looks like your Elvis type person, who can sing and who can project their voice and can make themselves like communicate with God and everything like that, or they are God to some people. So you've got that other type. I mean, you've all seen them late at night. You get on telly, or you're up early in the morning, you turn on telly, and apart from telemarketers, who else is on there? The evangelical people trying to sell you their way of reading the Bible, or their way of, you got to buy an audiobook in 20 different types, and it's only an easy payment of $20 a month, $19.99 a month. And they get on there and they've got these super churches and things like that. Those type of people are another type of those cult leaders. And then, of course, you've got everything in between. Then you've also got your occult type leaders. So people like Aleister Crowley, you could say his followers are very cult-like. You could say what he was doing was very cult-like, and how he ran things was very much like a cult leader. So you look at people like him and you go, okay, so he's using the dark arts. He's using a person's need for that spiritual fulfillment. They need to know there's something else after death, or they need to feel like they can make spiritualism happen in front of them. And following someone like an Aleister Crowley, will definitely lead them into that sense. And then you've got your gurus. Your gurus are your types that are like your financial guys. Now, you see these guys on YouTube all the time. You see them in their ads, or not just guys, ladies as well, trying to tell you that you can make millions selling books on Amazon. You can make millions by trading crypto, but you've got to buy their secrets. Now, guarantee you, you'll never see any of the wealthiest people in the world doing those ads. The real people, the ones who have real billion dollar wealth, will not be doing those ads. These people hire cars, they hire, Mercedes, or they hire Lamborghinis to have behind them to make it look like they're, super wealthy. How many millionaires do you really think have their Lamborghini parked in the back of their garage, which is also their YouTube studio. Yeah, it's just not feasible. But people follow that charisma. They get on board with that. I'm going to lead you down the path. I'm going to show you something new, and I'm going to show you how you can become like me. So you're being promised to become like the Messiah for a simple payment of $12 a month. But then you've got to buy everything else with it. Then you've got to pay to go to the seminars. Well, even worse now, they're paying you to sit in your home and watch the seminars. So it gets even more expensive. So they're your sort of self-help. They're your gurus, your guru-type cult leaders. Then we look at your people like your yogis. Now, yogis are the ones who are using their status in, say, spin-offs from Buddhism. These are like Rajneesh. These are people who very much use meditation, maybe some use of drugs, but definitely use of meditation, definitely use of Eastern belief systems to try to control how a person believes, what a person does. Then you've got, going back as well, to your gurus, yeah, your self-help gurus. We'll talk about a big one that is absolutely insane called Nexium, N-X-I-V-M, Nexium. There's definitely one we're gonna tackle over the next few months because their story is mind-blowing. The amount of control they had over people, they are essentially a sex cult, and yeah, they were exactly that, self-help gurus and yogis, combination of both. That led to a downfall. Now, I'm not saying all yogis are terrible. There are some genuine Buddhist and Hindu yogis who I believe are very in tune people and follow the religion very closely and are very good people, very giving people. But the yogis we're talking about are the ones that want to gather millions and thousands and hundreds, whatever group they've got, and they want to have them believe that they are a god. Like Rajneesh. So that covers sort of your overall types of the cult leaders you've got. You've also got cult leaders who lead through, basically I'd like to call them the YouTube cult leaders. And I'm pretty sure you can all sort of have a think about that and think about who these cult leaders are. These are people who need you to be subscribed to them, who need you to be following them, who need you to, because their whole life is based on that. They only made money because of YouTube. They only made money because of podcasting. And they can have a really bad followership. They can have really good followers. They can have really bad ones. Now, not all time, that these aren't always as bad as like, I'm going to get you to go and kill people or rob a bank. But sometimes you can have these personalities or these influencers who have people believing that to be just like them, they need to act like them. They need to, and it's not real. None of it's real. It's fake makeup. It's fake, you know, muscle implants. It's fake everything. But they create a cult of personality and they have a lot of people follow them. And then people hand their money over for their cheap ass t-shirts that have just been printed out the back of a Chinese sweatshop. You know, they which, yeah, I've got t-shirts as well, by the way, but I'm not going to be worried if you don't buy one. That's just if you're interested. But to be serious, we've got people out there who don't even realize that they're a cult leader, to be honest. That's a gray area. We're going to tackle that later in the year. Definitely a gray area. There's some people out there who don't realize how much control they have, or there's some people out there who do know how much control they have and they don't want to lose it, or they become so obsessed with it that's their whole life. Think Logan Paul, people like that. So, yeah, I mean, you quantify them into your cult leaders, your cults of personality. It's definitely... something to be aware of. So here's some ways to spot a cult leader. Now, again, this is a list that I'll put in the description below as well. So definitely check this one out. So the cultic leaders, how do you spot them? So number one, they tend to be charismatic and seductive with a penetrating, boundary-violating gaze and leave you feeling like a spell has been cast on you. They promise miracles and exaggerate their claims. They are self-inflated, grandiose, deem themselves special, and think they have the 411 direct to God. They often have a fascinating origin story that can't be proven or disproven. They often claim to have been granted a miracle of their own, and having been granted the miracle, they now have the power to grant you one for a fee or for sex or for something you might not wish to give away, like your power. They tend to be grandiose show-offs. If they do have mystical powers, some do, some just fake it. They love to flaunt it to impress you and hook you and make you feel fascinated. One part I don't agree with that is that some do. None of them have mystical powers. You may find yourself feeling ungrounded, dizzy, and ecstatic as if you've fallen in love. They disempower you to empower themselves, feeding off you energetically. So we call these energy vampires. They are masterful at gaslighting and make you doubt yourself. So, you'll tell them, but you said I was going to be a millionaire. No, I said you can be a millionaire like me if you do everything correctly. You mustn't have done something correctly. You mustn't have followed all my scriptures. You mustn't have done everything I told you to do. That's why you're a millionaire right now. They are very fragile. If you challenge them and wobble... If you challenge them and wobble under anything other than blind adoration and worship, especially if you bring up science, try to prove their claims, counter them with evidence to refute what they say, or otherwise suggest that they are anything other than the godlike messiah they claim themselves to be, they turn on you. Yeah, very quick to anger if you question them. They're often extremely insightful and intuitive and use your traumatic wounding to hook your most burdened inner children and try to get those parts to bond to them so they can control you. Once those inner children bond to your own divine self instead, you'll be less vulnerable. So what they're saying there is, understand who you are. Forgive yourself for your past stuff. Don't let someone use that inner childhood trauma or trauma from any time in your life to control you. They are unwilling to humble themselves, apologize, take responsibility for the behaviors, or otherwise admit to their humanity. If they wind up making a mistake instead, they'll double down on how special and righteous they are, even in the face of evidence to the contrary. They tend to mock science and critical thinking and cast aspersions on those who care about such things as if they're better than science. They try to separate you from your family and other loved ones who might question the cult leader and sow seeds of doubt in you. In order to achieve the 100% domination cult leaders require, they need to isolate you from the critical thinking, skeptical thinking as well, concerned loved ones who might talk some sense into you, and any healthy leader will support and foster you, your other intimate relationships, rather than force you to choose between the cult leader and your family and friends. So, a proper spiritual leader will never ask you to choose between your family and them. They create for the cult follower an intense and or unprecedented type of emotional experience, usually cathartic or touching into a trauma in some way. That trauma bonds the recruit into the leader's group. They preemptively arm the new recruit with the tools of how to fend off friends and family's concerns on the grounds that ordinary people don't understand what we're doing here and may try to talk you out of it. Don't let them. We have everything you need right here. And that's so powerful for someone who is very naive or someone who's very damaged or hurt to go into a group and be told, look, when you leave here and your family finds out about us, they're going to try to turn you. They're going to try to turn you against us. You go to your family, tell them what you're getting into, and your family generally wants to worry. They want to care. And all of a sudden you go, whoa, wow, he was right. They are trying to, disempower me. They are trying to stop me from joining this group. So, confirmation bias kicks in and the person then believes that the yogi or the leader is correct. They get a power hit off controlling cult followers with uniforms, dietary restrictions, weird sleep patterns, sexual prohibitions or requirements, or other patterns of domination. Now, again, going back to the financial gurus and people like that, how many of them tell you when to wake up, when to go to bed? How many of them tell you what you should be eating, when you should be training, when you should be working? There's some crazy stuff out there. I can't remember his name, but there was one I watched the other day who said that the first thing he thinks of every day is his most loved person in his family being killed in front of him. And then that's what makes him, you know, seize the day. That's what makes him, you know, that feeling that you know, he tells you to really believe. Now, someone correct me. Someone tell me this guy's name, because I'm going blank on his name. But he tells his followers to really believe that person is dead. And then you will then come to the realization that they're not dead. And then you'll use that hurt to then propel yourself in the day. Yeah. Crap bloody talking. That's friggin' insane. So if you turn away from the cult, they'll ramp it up with persistent unwillingness to let you step away. The cult leader, and often the followers as well, will argue, cajole, attack, gaslight, and threaten you with dire predictions of all catastrophic things that might happen to you if you don't cave in and join the cult. They may claim to have access to secret knowledge directly downloaded by some special spiritual power and refer you to a sacred text that cannot be questioned in its ultimate authority. They may inflate themselves with some special moniker like John of God or Shaman, a label never used by actual indigenous shamans. Yeah, so they might come up with things. Yeah, they might call themselves God. They might call themselves Messiah, Papa, Daddy, Mother, Mum, you know, whatever it is. They will use these ranking systems to control you. And these are always charismatic narcissists. And they always try to single people out. You know, you get three or four people following what you are believing, and then you get an individual who doesn't believe it. Put them in a room surrounded by the believers and by this charismatic narcissist, and they're outnumbered, they're outgunned, and they will start to believe everything that charismatic narcissist says, or even just a tiny bit. They'll get a tiny bit of it and they'll go with it. Now, we're going to end on this. There's always light at the end of the tunnel. You're never too far into a cult. I mean, apart from maybe hurting someone, you know, killing someone, raping someone, obviously there's breaking the law. But if you know someone, or if you are that person who is on the verge of joining cult, or feel, or you sort of go away from this going, I think I might be in a cult, or I think I've been invited to join a cult, look, reach out to me. I'm always happy to have a chat, even offline. Even if you don't want to come on the show, always happy to have a conversation. But there's always light at the end of the tunnel, and that's called deprogramming. The term deprogramming was coined in the 1970s when the emergence of new religious movements peaked across the USA. Often guised as an intervention, deprogramming was the practice of convincing cult members to renounce their group's ideology using whatever methods were deemed necessary. Now, back then, wasn't good. The 70s, you know, we're talking electrolysis, we're talking about a lot of bad ways, starving people. It was almost as bad as what the cult was doing to them. We still talk about deprogramming, but we've changed what deprogramming means in society now. Now it's more about speaking to a psychologist, speaking to a professional. As I said, I'm always here. I'm always happy to talk to people, but I'm not a professional. You should always speak to a professional. You should always seek out your doctor and seek out medical assistance. Speak to a psychologist, speak to a psychiatrist. Look, if all you can get is a local counselor at the hospital, at least it's a start. You know, speak to someone who's had training in this, and then that deprogramming can start. You can start to live a normal life. You can start to find better communities to be a part of. Start to rely on your own strength to push through tough times. So, yeah, I mean, exiting a cult can be one of the hardest things in the world. I've had run-ins with this venture of joining groups like this. I won't get into that too much right now because I've got to check whether I can legally actually say anything. But I don't want to be in, you know, I don't want to be slanderous or anything like that. But I know what it feels to have someone tell you that they're going to turn you into the next big thing and then to realize that, oh, these people are full of shit. How do I get out? Yeah, that can be terrifying. I didn't go too far down the rabbit hole with it, but I did enter the door. I will tell you that. So there is always a way back and you can always be helped. And sometimes that means if you've done the crimes, maybe you have to do the time. But we will end it out there. Again, if you need that help, definitely seek out ICSA, International Cultic Studies Association. They can help you or your local medical practitioners, or even read into groups like Cult Recovery 101. Always people out there to help. All right, so it's so great to be back. I'm so happy I recorded a show. Almost an hour and a half, or probably will be an hour and a half almost when we play this the outro song. So that's really cool. It's probably one of the longest shows I've done for a fair while. I'm really, really charged to talk about this stuff. And because I'm supercharged about talking about this darker side of the human mind, the cults, the rituals, things like that, it's also charging up that to do those oddball files where we talk about, you know, ET, where we talk about Bigfoot and things like that. I'm really charged up to do them too because they're a nice little breakaway. Because some of this stuff gets really, really heavy. I also want to look into things like missing 411. I want to look into, you know, why people, you know, do things like they did at Dyatlov Pass, where they all went insane, essentially. You know, how conditioning, how the environment, how external pressure can change a person and can control a person. I think it's very, very interesting, and I think it's really worth looking at. So I really hope you enjoyed this, and I really hope you jump on board. And if you don't want to jump on board with this stuff, just continue checking out the Oddball Files and enjoy all the other weird and wonderful things from around the world. Again, if you want to reach out to me, TheOddballAussie@hotmail.com, @AussieOddball on the Twitter and Instagram, and I'll definitely get back in touch with you if you reach out to me. Also, check out Wisdom on Wisdom over there. I have got a little page. You can check it out. You can ask me questions, and I can answer you the questions in real time, and I'll be doing some short format content on there as well. And check out the YouTube channel, The Oddball Aussie Podcast. And you also, yeah, wherever you listen to podcasts, you'll find this show. So again, I am so happy to be back. Look after each other. Stay safe out there in the weird. Good night, my friends.